Johnny and Crosby were partners. Yes, that's J.J. Johnson and Quintet with Bags Groove. And that's from 1958. See how much work I do just for you to enjoy some really great music? Bags Groove. J.J. Johnson is on trombone. Matt Adderley is on cornet. Tommy Flanagan is on piano. Wilbur Little is on bass. And Albert Heath of the Heath Brothers on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Matrice Lead. And here's the thing. Yesterday, we had copious responses to the program yesterday, people wanting to chime in. And I did say yesterday that we will make room to hear from you. And that's what we're going to do today. We will pick up from where we left off yesterday for the subject that we had started. This way you get a chance to express your views. And when we're through with the complement of people calling in, when we have time, if we have time today, we move on to our other subjects. But I just did not want to miss our group calling in yesterday and couldn't get in. What were we talking about yesterday? We were talking about your reactions to issues in play right now and interpreting them and what they mean. What do they mean? And this is a very important aspect also of how we think. It's not just to hear what the news is. You have to ask yourself the question, what does it mean? What are the ramifications, in other words, of such an item? What does it convey? What is the next layer of meaning? And in almost every story, you would find that. There is a backdrop. There is a meaning. It is not just a literal report. It is also, maybe you want to look ahead. What does this mean? What other things might develop? What should we be prepared for? And this is, I find that most news people don't do that anymore. Not that they did it before a lot, but, you know, it is very important. Some stories are very, very important that you report not just the facts as they are at the moment, you know, the latest news, as they used to say. But you want to know, or you want to put people in the framework of thinking, well, okay, so we get this information, but what does it mean? What's coming down the pike? What other stories is this news report hinting at that we should be thinking about? Not that you get paranoid, of course, but that you put yourself ahead, a little bit ahead, because the news itself is telling you what future news might be. All right. So we talked yesterday, we asked a question, are schools for the gifted and talented doing more harm than good to education and our society? Are schools for the gifted and talented doing more harm than good to education, as we know it, and our society? It's a complex question. It sounds very simple, but it isn't a simple question. And we certainly got into that yesterday with people expressing some very insightful opinions about this notion that is being bandied around all over the place now, about gifted and talented education, education for the gifted and talented. Lots of views about that. And they, I must say, they were all on point, all on point. So if you're one of those wanting to talk about this subject, but you weren't able to be accommodated yesterday, please call now so we can get you at the top of the program and then we move on to some other subjects. But I did not want to leave you out there wanting to say something, wanting to contribute on this particular subject, but just the way things work. We had a lot of people wanting to say something about this issue as well. And it was very, very profitable in that sense to just let the program take as many people as we can. And so I did announce yesterday that we will continue the discussion today. Depending on the response, we'll see how much time we can devote to it, but we have other things to move on to. So it means you got to move fast. You got to move like you mean it. You got to move. If you want to be in on this conversation, really, I'm trying to kind of get you agitated enough to call as quickly as you can so that we can hear what you have to say. What is your contribution to that subject before we move on? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. 888-874-4888. Are schools for the gifted and talented doing more harm than good to education and our society? What's your opinion? Is there anybody on yet? No, I don't see anybody on yet. Okay. We have Jackie from Brooklyn. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jackie.
Okay, I want to, I try to keep my comments brief so other people can have time. But there was more that I wanted to say yesterday about this issue. I'll be brief as possible. I told you yesterday about my experience with my oldest son, and he was in the gifted class. But I also want to say something in the context of education in the greater society. Patricia explained the history of the gifted program and how it was geared to capture certain people that were leaving the city of New York. But in this, within this context of this so-called gifted and talented, we also have to be very aware of the fact that there is... they're starting charter schools. The charter schools are within the public school, but it's a segregated setting in that the charter school children use the facility, the physical plant of the school, and the libraries, and sometimes the children at a public school children have to leave the public school building and go out to a neighborhood library. So that's another extension of this so-called gifted and talented segregation, separation. So we're finding that that's going on too here in the city of New York. But one thing I wanted to bring up, Eutrice, is I have another son who was disabled. And the contrast between trying to get services for him and the contrast of the so-called gifted and talented services for my older son was just shocking. And it still continues today. Even now in the pandemic, the children that were in family shelters and supposedly getting education through tablets, some of these children never had a tablet. Even if it was supplied to them, there was no internet services in the family shelters. So let's contrast all of this together and show what this path of intellectual segregation is doing, and it is definitely not a positive aspect for children of color. I was heartened by what David's remarks were about when he took his children to school. They immediately wanted to put them in a free lunch program. So this whole concept is a microcosm of the problems that we see of racism in this society. So I just wanted to bring that up. When you contrast what services are available to the so-called gifted and talented, and the 1% to 2% population of students of color who can attend those schools, and then you contrast that with the thousands of children that have been designated by the Board of Education as being learning disabled, special needs, whatever, you'll see that this whole educational process is just another example of racism in this society. So I'm going to get off and let other people get on, but I wanted to just add that component that, all right? So you have a wonderful
family. Thank you so much.
Thank you for
this. I'm glad you called back again today. Thank you. And you added yet another dimension to the subject. Thank you very much, Jackie, for your call today. Jean from Maryland, you're on the air.
Thank you, Eutrice, and good afternoon to you and the listening audience.
Good afternoon.
So this topic struck me so yesterday, namely because I'm smack in the middle of dealing with this right now with one of my own children. I live in Prince George's County, Maryland. And according to the U.S. Census Bureau, Prince George's County, a bedroom community, has the wealthiest black population in George's County, is quite lacking. There are low test scores, insufficient facilities, teachers who face lots of challenges. The list is long. And there is a schism that has been set up here in the county over a long period of time that creates these pockets of good schools or good school programs where parents are made to fight for seats. Now, we were able to get our oldest child into a middle school for performing arts, which is a very good program, and we were very pleased with that, but now she's aging out. And we're looking for high school options. The large number of high schools in the county are low performers with students who are not ready for rigor. And a lot of that happens, and as you pointed out a moment ago, this is complicated. So we're just near the Washington, D.C. line, and Washington, D.C. is going through a tremendous gentrification effort where poor people, low-performing students, et cetera, are being pushed out of the city across the Maryland line, and those students who are not ready for rigor are pushed into these schools, which then lower the performance level and unfortunately lowers the standards in the schools. And so as we look for high school now, the challenge is to find a place where a child who is ready for rigor can go and perform and find schooling that is adequate to her ability. So I wanted to bring that into the discussion because it is broader, at least here, it is broader than simply a program in one school. But here we're dealing with that issue on a countywide level. And I remember a discussion, and I guess this is about 25 years ago, where Mr. Hamilton, Hugh Hamilton, was sitting in for you on your show one day, and he brought up this topic. And he was pointing out that the parents are somewhat responsible for the performance challenges of their children. And living in this environment, I tend to agree with that because I see an awful lot of parents who like to party, like to go on vacation, and for whatever reason, they don't ensure that their children are developing good study habits. They are not making sure that work is complete. They do not come and join the parent-teacher associations. They do not support their children in activities after school, and so on. And we're seeing that. And so I bring all of that to the table this afternoon to really point out the complexity of this issue, to simply say it's not as simple as a program that receives some special funding for a select group of children. And that's true. That does happen. But I think that there's a lot more at play here that really starts to raise some of these economic questions, which I believe you had a caller yesterday. I'm not sure if that was Josiah, who was really pointing out some of these economic issues. And when you get down to it, education as we know it is designed to build workers. It is not designed to build thinkers. And so the idea is that we can just do any old thing with them. It doesn't matter. So I'll rest there.
Well, I have a couple of levels of reaction. One is these arguments and these issues don't come up when the system is talking specifically about white children. They don't. The accepted fact in that sense is those children are capable. And the system is there to assist in the success of the children. So then they don't even waste time with the problems with the parents because they have goals to achieve. They have standards to maintain, all focused on the children. So you have an entirely different attitude by the system itself. They would be very upset and very concerned if a child is not in class for 3 days in a row, for example. Or if they see the child's grades falling, there would be calls to the home, to the parents. We have to talk about this because they're operating on a different system of metrics, which determines their so-called success. So they have goals that they're functioning with. It doesn't seem as a whole that there is great attention even to the minutest details about the educational standards and achievement levels of black and brown children in particular. It's an amazing thing. It's right there in the open, and we don't see very much by the system. It does not get too agitated about this. So that for black and brown children, education is largely a way of teaching children to behave. You don't have to learn anything. Just behave. That demand would not dare show its face when the children are white. They have to learn something. They have standards to achieve. They have, you know, they have to be checked to see how well they're doing comparatively speaking to other children and to the expectations of the system itself. They have real standards. Those are real children. Black and brown children are not real children. It's more like a form of daycare. Just keep them occupied and make sure they don't make too much trouble.
Let me leave you with one more anecdote. On the other side of the Potomac River is Fairfax County, Virginia. And Fairfax schools are one of the stronger school systems in the country. And I have a friend who is a principal at a middle school in Fairfax County. School started in September, or August, actually. She told me that by the 15th of September, the PTA had $250,000 in the budget for the school as discretionary funds for the principal to use for the students to take trips and to do activities and all kinds of things. Now, on the one hand, that has more to do with the idea that this is an area where there are parents with money, and I accept that. But I think what it also shows is that there is a willingness and an expectation and a level of participation on behalf of parents to recognize that they have to be involved, that their participation is important for their children's education, and they jump in with both feet and a pocketbook.
Well, I understand that. My own point of reference is I went to a little school in Trinidad. It's a little rinky-dinky school. It's a kind of inside joke to call it a school. It was just a bunch of bricks put together. And, you know, we had classrooms, which, you know, as you look back, it's laughable to call it classrooms. But that's what they were to us. And I tell you, you could get no finer education than in that little school, that little ramshackle school. We didn't have books. We didn't have lots of this, and we didn't have lots of that. But we had some teachers I would put up against anybody. And they took an interest in their students in the same way. I always remember this teacher named Mrs. King. Mrs. King was, you know, after I left home to go to school, Mrs. King was my second mother. We didn't have a lot. So we had more of nothing than we had something. But it was a phenomenal school. All of the teachers were clear about why they were there. And the task was to make the children rise to a level, and we had something called Island Scholarships and all kinds of academic contests. We were in the running all the time. And you wonder, well, how come a little ramshackle school in the middle of a sugarcane field, how is it possible? It is possible. Quite possible. But translating that level of commitment and producing it here in the United States is quite a feat. Compared to what teachers have here, compared to what other teachers are dealing with in other countries, every teachers are, they like royalty. And still the children are not doing well. How come? That's a central question.
As I say, it's complex. It is.
Yes, it is.
And Look
but,
at the foolishness.
You know, nobody says that, how complex it is when it comes to white children. It is understood that as complex as it may be, there better be results. And the kinds of results that basically please the parents, no matter how complex it is. You are the expert at teaching children, teach this one too. You can produce scientists. I can't tell you how many people come out of a little rinky-dink school like I went to. They're doctors and lawyers and they're professionals, they're in business. They're achieving things in life. Coming out of a know-nothing school, you have to buy your own pencils. You got to borrow somebody's copybook. Your school, your class may be flooded, it may not be. But they understood, they had an entirely different approach to this word called education. An entirely different dedication to it. The parents and the teachers. So the results were different. And it boggles the mind that I understand there are so many challenges to education, but we get to the nitty-gritty. We still cannot erase this line as to who deserves education and who does not. That is the bottom line. It is determined in rooms that we don't see and by people we don't know who deserves what we call education and who does not. Thanks so much for
Thank
calling
you.
In, Jean. And I hope we hear from you again to give us an update as to how things are going. Thank you. Patricia, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice, and good afternoon to the parents. And I hope all is well. I just wanted to add a couple of comments to my response yesterday, because I think my response yesterday indicated that I was opposed to gifted and talented, but I neglected to share that I was a recipient of the gifted and talented program. It started for me in the eighth grade in middle school, eighth and ninth grade, and I came into the school in eighth grade, but the kids had already been together since seventh grade. So seventh, eighth, and ninth grade, we stayed together, separate and apart from the other classes in the middle school. And then we all went together to our high school. Now, I graduated in 1966. My graduating class was approximately 1,000 kids. Out of 1,000 kids, only 35, and the 35 were those of us who were in the gifted and talented in high school, only 35 out of 1,000 children received the education that we got. And when I tell you it was rigorous, it was by senior year, we were doing, collegiate level work at the freshman level. And that was the quality of education that 35 out of 1,000 kids received. And it has literally troubled me since then, because over time I recognized that we received an unfair education compared to the other 9,600 children. Those kids were divided into a general tract, which meant non-academic, into a commercial tract, which means you were being geared to secretarial in the business world, but at a secretarial level, and then a tract for kids who were good with their hands. I forget what they call that track, but those kids were filtered into a program that would essentially lead to a track that would enable them to go out and work. And a lot of what Marcus, I what Marcus shared with us yesterday was essentially a lot of what I came to understand, that early on, a specific segment of children, and there were only two of us in that class of 35, but a specific segment, a small segment, they have identified as who is going to be your academicians and the people who control policy at a government level. We all did very well. The 35 of us, we all did very well. As a matter of fact, we have kept in contact, and we all thrived. But I often wondered what happened to those other 900 kids. So I just wanted to share that from a personal level, I benefited, but I don't believe that that was right.
No, it wasn't right. It wasn't. I could tell you the flip side of that story from my little rinky-dink school, I called it. Okay. My older brother is a physician and a professor of medicine. My brother, over him, was the international director for Digicel. My younger brother is basically, he was a day trader on Wall Street and is now learning. He has apprenticed with one of the world's leading authorities on architectural restoration. That's what he's doing now. My youngest brother is a day trader. All out of that little school. All started out of that little school. And there must be something to the idea that children, the feeling is, as, okay, you leave your house and then you go to a place called school and then something else takes over. Our experience has been that it's, you know, you leave home, you leave your mom and your dad at home, and then you go meet Mr. Brown and then Mrs. King. It's the same thing as mom and dad all over again. So it was very unsophisticated and yet deeply sophisticated because they were educators and they understood the mission to educate. You know, something happened to the interpretation of that word. Educators don't seem to know what educating means. They're not taught the fine art of education because they don't see these children as their own and having responsibility for bringing them up in the same way that their parents would bring them up at home. With the same, yes, a certain discipline, but they're safe and they're loved and they're being educated. A lot has been lost, and it isn't so much an emotional thing. It is the state implementing its program to produce an inferior class, an inferior race. And this is what has happened to education. Thanks so much. It's a heartwarming story hearing your version of that experience. Thank you, Patricia, for contributing today.
Thank you.
Lincoln from Mount Vernon, you're on the air.
Hi there, Eutrice.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm hanging in. How about you?
I'm persevering, as usual. Always persevering.
Good.
Through the vicissitudes of life.
The vicissitudes of life. I like that.
Since I was a child, I've always maintained that everyone is way beyond what they call a potential genius. And I have had many experiences which prove that to me and also in other people too. who I knew personally. And because I believe that everyone is way beyond a potential genius, I mean, way beyond Einstein, etc. Einstein, etc., these people are no better than anyone else. It's just that in all of us, our minds are like door, are like rooms, and they're doors to every room. And sometimes by happenstance, a door might be open in a so-called child prodigy, and that's why they function the way they do. And I have had experiences to prove that. But before I want to relate a particular experience of mine, but before I do that, because of what you said about your schooling, I want to say this. When I was growing up in Jamaica, the poor did not perform any less than the rich. In the high, and what they call rigorous education here was what we all got in public high school in Jamaica. The whites, the Asians, none of them outperformed any black student. Not one. And sometimes the students who got distinctions were the students who originally they used to walk barefooted. You know, I sometimes look back and I realize, wow, I took my education for granted in Jamaica. You know, when I came to this country, I was in my teens. And my first day in a... And I was a mediocre student in Jamaica. Not mediocre in potential, but in performance. And I remember my first day here, I went into a class. It was marking... It was the end of marking period. You know, in Jamaica, you know, like you in Trinidad, I guess, we don't have marking periods. We had semesters. And we're here 6 weeks and 6 weeks. So the day I went in, it was the end of the marking period, and they were having finals. And I went to a biology class, and this white teacher said to me, "Oh, you're from Jamaica. Your first day here. Don't take the test, you know, because all these American children didn't study." I said, "I don't mind." And it was a biology test. I outperformed every one of them. And I hadn't been in school for several months, you know. They were in shock. They thought I was a genius, not knowing that back home in Jamaica, I was mediocre.
That was normal.
You know? Right, it was normal. So what they call rigorous here, their so-called private schools here and schools for the gifted does not perform higher than what a regular high school was doing in my time in Jamaica. But, you know, nowadays everything is becoming Americanized. We didn't even have multiple choice exams. Every class, in math, everything, you had to explain how you got an answer. But I want us to always remember, everyone is way beyond a potential, a genius. And I've experienced it. I've seen it. When I was a student in Jamaica, and the reason why I brought up the potential genius is to say that. So when you have schools for the so-called gifted, what you're doing is you're not realizing that the children who are not performing well, there is some obstacle, there is some problem. So rather than having a school for the so-called gifted, you should identify what is blocking the genius of others. And give students individual attention so that all of our so-called genius can come forth. Because what Einstein did is nothing special, because we are all way, potentially way beyond that. And I have proven it even myself at, you know, various moments. You know, when I was in Jamaica, in Latin, I'm not good in it anymore, but I was the poorest student in Latin. There was a boy, his name was Herbert Smith, and I used to copy from Herbert word for word. I mean, I literally used to copy from Herbert. When we went from second form, like you know, in each, you have first form, second form, third form, fourth, fifth, and each of them you have 1A, B, C, D. 1A would mean that you're the top performing, B means next, C, average, D means that you're barely getting through, you know. So anyway, in second form, I think I was in either 2B or 2A, and I used to copy from Herbert Smith. When we went to third form, Herbert was promoted to 3A, and I think I was promoted to either 3D or 3C. I didn't have Herbert to copy from anymore, and I became the number one student in Latin in the school, way beyond Herbert. And the strangest thing is, I did not study. Seems like the embarrassment and the fear of them not knowing, now knowing that I was copying, must have just jolted with this, that door to be opened in me. And suddenly, I start understanding even words I didn't study, which also makes me believe, I've always believed that all knowledge, except the hidden knowledge, is within us all. All knowledge. We all have a knowledge of every subject, every discipline. It's in us. I was a poor student in mathematics, and I remember I had this particular person. You know, I used to visit her after my classes in Manhattan, you know. And one day I went by her house, and she had this thick book, and it was about 300-400 pages with, you know, mathematics, you know. And something just drew me to it, and I just opened the book and start, you know, going through, flipping through the pages, start teaching myself. And every day I would come, stop by her house, and go through this book, not knowing where it's going to lead me. When I got to the last few, almost the last pages, there was a test at the back of the book, and I didn't know that this was going to occur. And so, since it's the page for that day, I went through the test. Come to find out, the following page was a page with all the answers. And to my surprise, I got 100 out of 100. And I was a poor performing student in Jamaica. But for some reason, that door opened. So I'm saying all this to say, all this stuff, and also to remind us that in Jamaica, at my time, no white students outperform any black students, whether they were rich or poor. No Chinese or whatever outperformed any of us, not one. And even, and like you, all of my friends became so-called doctors, lawyers, etc., etc. I still believe that most of them are still brainwashed education, though. Yeah, and that was the only good thing about my thing, is that I was an independent thinker. So I didn't really. So even though I respect the fact that all these people excelled academically, I still see that they were, a lot of it was brainwashed education, you know, which is what we are experiencing today, even in the so-called gifted schools, you know. It's brainwashed education, like Bob Marley said. But that's my little bit for today.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm glad that you are among us. Thanks a lot, Lincoln, for your call today. Jeremiah from Harlem, you're on the air.
How are you today, Latrice?
Okay. How are you?
Fine, thank you. And I just want to thank you for this outstanding conversation that you've opened the floor to both yesterday and today. I think there have been some really outstanding comments from all the various callers.
Thank you.
So I wanted to speak from my experience as an educator. As you know, I'm a chess instructor, and I've actually taught chess for 20 years in the New York City area primarily, and I've taught in every borough except for Staten Island, and I've been inside a lot of different schools. And I wanted to share a simple story about a time I was called to substitute. I needed to enter a school I was unfamiliar with in sort of a substitute capacity in Brownsville, Brooklyn. And I knew it was a fairly rough area in the city, just demographically speaking. And I was a little concerned, not for my own safety at all, because, you know, I know how to handle myself, but just a little concerned in terms of what kind of environment am I walking into. And when I got to the school, I was just so amazed at how polite all of these children were and how interested in learning they were. And in fact, they were a lot more polite and a lot more receptive than the privileged kids that I was normally working with in the downtown, you know, Battery Park area. And it really struck me. It was very sad for me to think after the experience. I was thinking, wow, Those children are so full of light and so full of intelligence and curiosity, and it takes so much to drive them into the wrong direction, you know, in through the cradle to prison pipeline, however you want to refer to it. I was just thinking, wow, you know, these kids will tell you, I want to learn how to play chess. And they might not have an opportunity to do so. They might say, I want to be a doctor. Well, you should start teaching them about medicine and health right then and there, instead of saying, oh, well, you go through a whole process and in 20 years you could be a doctor. If we were attentive to these kids and feeding their curiosity and respecting them, they would do outstanding 99.99% of the time. But we surround them with negativity and take no responsibility for it. You know, the educational process is one thing, but what about our society? I mean, we're a society of butchers. We're a vulgar society. We're a mean-spirited society. You know, if I take my son or my young daughter outside just for a walk, as soon as we step outside, we're going to hear the N-word. We're going to hear people cursing about something. You know, some people are so vulgar nowadays, they'll come up to me and say something nice to me about my son and curse. They'll say, wow, your son is so effing cute. And it's just so amazing to me. You know, I know they don't mean any harm. They meant to be nice in doing so. I'm not offended. I'm just sort of startled. And, you know, it's like we have these figures that we uphold over society, these rap stars, these rock stars, these actors, and what are they ultimately promoting? They're promoting meaninglessness and nothingness. They're promoting indecency. And it seems to me rather by design that these people are handpicked to show this is the image of success. Be negative, be vulgar, insult people, and we'll celebrate you. And the fact is, that doesn't work for most of the kids in our community. That works for very, very few people. And a lot of people wind up making bad decisions, emulating this kind of attitude that's being portrayed over the society and directed especially towards young people on a daily basis. Like, I found it interesting several years ago, and I wonder what the status of the school is. Actually, I should follow up, come to think about it. But the Harlem School of the Arts was at risk of closing. And there was a last-second plea from some celebrities, and hopefully the celebrity donations and other donations saved the school. And I don't know the circumstances now. Hopefully the school still exists. But it struck me when they were trying to save that school, well, why do you want to save the school? We don't like jazz. We don't like ballet. We don't like the fine arts anymore. Now the arts are a mechanical drum beat and someone just cursing over the beat. And that passes as songwriting. You know, now you can just say a bunch of curses and we'll call it comedy. So, you know, it's just a very interesting thing. We're telling the kids in a very superficial way to be thoughtful and intelligent with ignorance and insensitivity. And those are my comments for today.
Well, let me ask you, in your view, has the educational system failed in strategic ways? It's failed all these generations that you're talking about.
Yeah, I think it's part and parcel of the entire society. As I said, I think the teachers, for the most part, are trying their best. I came across a lot of really great teachers, teachers that I'll never forget. There's very few bad teachers that stood out to me as outstandingly bad. But it's like a movie where no matter how good an actor you are, the script is so terrible, it's not going to be a good movie. And that's what's happening in the schools, is that, you know, the schools are becoming a dumping ground where you're asking the teacher to also play the role of developmental psychologist and all these other things that are completely unrealistic. So if it was just a matter of teaching specific skills, that would be one thing. But you have students who are entering the classroom environment and they're just there acting out their personal struggles and their personal issues in a larger space. And those kids need help and need attention too, but it winds up being a thing where it's a detriment to the entire class, extremely stressful and unfair to the teacher. In some cases, unsafe.
Mm-hmm. So are you hopeful about the future of education?
I try to be hopeful in general, but my hope is always with people and not with systems. You know, if they impose these vaccine mandates on children, then I'm going to have to homeschool my kids, not by my own choice. I'm a believer in schools and a classroom environment, or, you know, a teacher and an environment of learning. I wouldn't want to homeschool my kids, but I just might have to if things are going in the direction that they're going. And I think that's maybe where there's some enthusiasm in terms of new modes of learning. You know, we really underestimate the resources in our own community in terms of a musical education, a literary education, the sciences. There's a lot of wealth in our own community that's not being, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not being maximized for the benefit of the community. And we don't always need to turn to institutions, especially if the institutions themselves are not showing a great deal of interest in our actual education and in the cultivation of intelligence. I think it's a great conversation that is touched on in many of the works by Krishnamurti, where he simply asks the question, well, what is intelligence? What is intelligence, actually? I mean, I think that should be one of the fundamental questions in a classroom that all students should consider. I mean, does it make you intelligent to do complicated math problems in your head? Well, a computer can do that. So computers are more intelligent than people. Is intelligence a human attribute, or is it simply recording and calculating? And I think intelligence implies some sensitivity and some awareness. And maybe there should be some more emphasis on that as well. The question of, well, what is the point of education? What are we doing? Is it simply to pass tests? Is it simply to fulfill functions? Or is there something more meaningful about it?
Well, I hope the authorities have been listening to this, or will listen to this, what was said today and yesterday, because just this alone could change attitudes, and by doing so, change policies a little bit. And it goes for the parents as well, and the entire community. This is a community endeavor. Education is happening all the time. But I agree with Jeremiah that our communities have become so fragmented, so assaulted, and it is unrelenting. And there are few, if any, meaningful ways to retrieve people anymore. And that, too, is a function of education. I mean, even the word education is it combines the word "e", meaning out of, and "ducere", to lead. So people are led out of a state of not knowing into a state of knowing. Along the way, you maximize your potential and become a far more a valued member of your society, because you can repeat the process and add more to it. It is no question that we have an education crisis, but it is universal, it seems, that all these different countries are experiencing a crisis in their model of education, and certainly in the outcome of education. And we have to take a look, a serious look, at where we are with this model of education, or these models of education that have been put into play. Have we benefited, and are we benefiting from them? Is it doing these children any good? What can we do to make it better? These are the kinds of things that we have to ponder. But I want to thank everyone. I really was riveted by your contributions. because at the heart of it is a desire that we do better. And that is always a good sign. We're not giving up, and we're not just wagging the finger of blame, but we are talking about impact of what is considered a great institution. And we're trying to send the signals that it is not doing what it's supposed to do. And so we ought to take a deeper look and save the children, because that saves us all. Thanks so much for listening. Let's get together tomorrow and talk some more. Bye-bye.